Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker. A Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. And from the Florida AFL-CIO, representing over 900,000 union members, retirees, and their families, committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace. Online at flaflcio.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
With only a few days left in the session, Florida lawmakers are still arguing over whether to arm teachers.
If we are going to have them, let's not protect our children on the cheap. Pay the money, have the law enforcement officers there who can do their job.
Also tonight, major changes to higher education are on their way to Governor Rick Scott's desk.
I think it will really transform how higher education moves forward in Florida with impact, particularly to students and their families.
We'll also get some insight into why so many preservationists are livid over proposed changes to Florida's growth management laws, and also check out the battle between convenience and fear of fraud when it comes to notary seals. 3 days left to go in the 2018 Florida lawmaking session. I'm Tom Flanagan, and this is Capitol Report. The Florida House has now started discussions on gun safety legislation in response to last month's mass shooting at a South Florida high school. They agreed Tuesday to take up the Senate version of the bill that narrowly passed on Monday, and as Sasha Cordner reports, while language was stripped from that bill to exclude most classroom teachers, opponents argue the compromise could still arm school staff like coaches.
Junior varsity coach Aaron Feist is one of the 17 who lost his life in last month's Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School mass shooting. He died after shielding students from multiple bullets. At his funeral, Broward County Sheriff Scott Israel, who knew Feist, says he was always like that.
Before you even heard how he died, you knew he died putting himself in harm's way to save others. That's who he was.
Now, the Florida Senate wants to name the formerly called School Marshal Program after Feist. That's the controversial provision allowing designated teachers to carry firearms on school grounds if they are deputized and complete law enforcement training. Incoming Senate President Bill Galvano, the bill's sponsor, says it's now called the Coach Aaron Feist Guardian Program.
There were so many heroes that day. He was not the only one. But he stood out.
With this change, all reference to the school marshal program is now taken out, and it's now called the Guardian Program. Still, even with that change, Hialeah Republican Senator Renee Garcia wanted to make sure classroom teachers were excluded from the bill. But Democrats like Senator Jose Javier Rodriguez argue it only applies to those who are, quote, exclusively teachers, adding it still opens the door to a number of school personnel.
We're talking about paraprofessionals. We're talking about teaching specialists. We're even talking about librarians and media specialists. We're talking about counselors, placement professionals, career specialists, school psychologists, all under this could still be carrying a weapon.
Also under the new change, classroom teachers who have other roles like coaching would not be excluded from participating in the voluntary program. Neither would classroom teachers of a junior ROTC program. Still, Garcia, who also doesn't like the arming teachers provision, says this is the best he could do.
Would I want to see it go further? Of course I would like to see it go further, but in this political process that we live in, it's a part of give and take.
And Senate President Joe Negron says this change was needed in order to get the bill across the finish line. As it passed 20-18 with bipartisan support, it also had Republicans and Democrats voting against it. If one person had voted against it, the bill would have failed on a tied vote, 19-19.
I think that amendment was an effort to clarify that we weren't expecting frontline teachers to take on those additional security duties, but it's certainly appropriate to have administrators and others with security responsibilities. I think that that amendment was critically important in getting to the 20-18 vote that in support of the bill.
Meanwhile, over in the House, they agree to start discussions on the Senate bill as a whole Tuesday. It still includes a bump stocks ban, allows law enforcement to seize weapons from those deemed mentally ill and likely pose a threat, and raises the minimum age a person can buy any gun to 21. The legislation also includes millions of dollars in funds for mental health, a memorial honoring the Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School victims who lost their lives, and hardening for the school buildings. There's also money included for the sheriff's offices who want to establish a school guardian program, also known as the Arming Teachers Provision. But some sheriffs are concerned there won't be enough funds, something Republican Representative Kathleen Peters asked House bill sponsor Jose Oliva.
The question I have, and it was in the paper, and it was regarding my sheriff's statement, and so I'd like you to clarify that, if you would. He stated that the $67 million to train the volunteer teachers, if the school board or district decides not to, or the school decides not to, then a sheriff's officer would go in and make sure that school has someone as the deterrent. And his statement was, is there's no funding for that. Is that statement accurate?
As it stands, the sheriff would be correct.
One failed amendment that had more than an hour of debate would have removed the arming teachers part. It's one of about 80 filed mostly by House Democrats to change the gun safety bill. Other amendments included a ban on assault weapons and high-capacity magazines, as well as a two-year moratorium on the sale of AR-15s. That latter amendment actually passed the Florida Senate in a voice vote, but was later brought up again and rejected. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
The Florida legislature has passed sweeping higher education changes. As Sean Mulcahy reports, the measures would permanently increase funding to the Bright Futures Scholarship Program, eliminate free speech zones, and address university performance-based funding.
Revamping the state's higher education system has been a priority for Senate President Joe Negron. He praises the passage of this education package, citing the benefits not just to students, but also to Florida's economy.
When we have great universities, it's an economic engine. When you see communities that are vibrant, growing, you almost always see a connection to a university presence. And secondly, that our students, when they graduate from these universities, the job offers that they have, their ability to go to the best medical schools, law schools, dental schools, business schools, is significantly increased.
Negron has pushed for permanently expanding the Bright Futures Scholarship for a few years. This bill would expand the top tier, called the academic level, to cover the full price of tuition and cover the summer term. The measure would also expand the lower medallion level to cover 75% of tuition and their summer term. Port Richey Republican Representative Amber Mariano calls Bright Futures a lifeline for many students to afford higher education.
This will change lives and will enable students who never thought they could afford a degree in college education to receive one.
A controversial provision added by the House would remove public university and college campus free speech zones. The measure would instead make all outdoor public areas available for free speech. It would also allow state universities and colleges to be sued if students or others intentionally try to disrupt or hinder a campus speaker. Proponents argue free speech zones infringe on the First Amendment by limiting what students can say and where they can say it. But opponents worry it could open schools to unnecessary lawsuits and disrupt learning.
It's easy to protect soft, nice speech that everyone wants to hear, but the test of free speech is how you allow people whose ideas are unpopular to be heard.
That's Dania Beach Democratic Representative Joe Geller. He argues free speech should be protected, but
I don't think we're there, because exposing our universities to this cause of action, exposing them to what should be unnecessary lawsuits and taxpayer expenses is not the answer, although I recognize you have to have a penalty. You have to have some teeth to enforce this. I just don't think this is quite the right solution.
The education package also calls for the state university system's governing board to evaluate changes to the way universities receive performance-based funding. Currently, the Board of Governors conducts an audit of Florida's public universities and doles out bonuses to the top-performing institutions, with the bottom three universities receiving no additional funding. Opponents like Tallahassee Democratic Representative Ramon Alexander say it's unfair for a small liberal arts school like New College to compete with large research universities like the University of Florida.
You can improve your retention rates, you can improve your job placement rates, and you can be penalized. But then we ask you to come back year after year and compete on the same playing field. It is a flawed system.
Additional provisions in the legislation include scholarships for first-generation college students, well-qualified out-of-state students, and National Merit Scholar students. The bill is now headed to Governor Rick Scott's desk for approval. For Florida Public Radio in Tallahassee, I'm Sean Mulcahy.
Still to come on Capitol Report, bill sponsor Dana Young dubbed her measure the Trauma Without Drama bill, which she says came together as a consensus product with bipartisan support.
I think you can feel good about the product that you have and that this will lead to a system that best serves your constituents.
Firefighters and police officers deal with PTSD, but workers' compensation may not cover those kinds of non-physical injuries.
PTSD for firefighters is real. If your loved one is experiencing signs, get them help quickly.
And lawmakers are working to balance convenience with the potential for fraud.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by the Able Trust, dedicated to connecting businesses and workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to recruit, interview, and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. Abletrust.org.
More than a decade of discord over how to apportion Florida's trauma centers may have come to a close today with the Senate's passage of what amounts to a compromise. We get that story from Ryan Daly.
Republican Senator Dana Young is celebrating a long-awaited kumbaya moment after her trauma care centers bill passed unanimously. Young dubbed the measure the Trauma Without Drama bill, which she says came together as a consensus product with bipartisan support.
At least a decade of intense dispute over our trauma system, I think you can feel good about the product that you have and that this will lead to a system that best serves your constituents.
The bill changes the borders of trauma service areas. There are currently 19 around the state, drawn up based on population. The measure will eliminate the service area currently serving Dade and Monroe counties and allow for revisions to others. For Bruce Rubin, president and CEO of the Florida Hospital Association, the measure's passage symbolizes a new day for trauma care in the state. He says some healthcare organizations felt stifled under the present system.
Trauma has always been determined, the location, the number of trauma services has been done through a needs-based system. And in recent years, there are those, some healthcare organizations feel like that system wasn't allowing them to develop trauma services where they chose to, so there it became very, very controversial.
Rubin calls Young's leadership a game changer.
Well, I think that a lot of this frustration and controversy that we've dealt with over the years is going to be resolved because we have a bill now that realigns the borders of the trauma service areas. It maintains a needs-based approach to determining the number and the placement of trauma centers.
The plan also requires the Department of Health to create the Florida Trauma System Advisory Council, which will submit reports to DOH on how to maximize resources.
So you've got a group of people who are going to oversee how these the new rules will be implemented and what the consequence of them are. And this should allow us to, start from a position of cooperation among the stakeholders.
Now, DOH will have to watch and wait for results, as it is tasked with performing an analysis of the state's trauma system every 3 years, beginning in 2020. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Ryan Daly.
Florida lawmakers have approved a bill that will give the state's first responders with emotional injuries access to workers' compensation. Devondra Alston reports.
In October 2016, David Dangerfield, a former Indian River County firefighter, died from a self-inflicted gunshot.
And just before he took his life, he posted to Facebook, "PTSD for firefighters is real."
That's Republican Representative Aaron Grawl. Dangerfield was the cousin of her husband, Michael.
If your loved one is experiencing signs, get them help quickly. 27 years of deaths and babies dying in your hands is a memory that you will never get rid of. It haunted me daily until now. My love to my crews. Be safe. Take care. I love you all.
Democratic Representative Matt Wilhite is a sponsor of the bill, now heading to Governor Rick Scott. It allows first responders with PTSD and other emotional traumas to qualify for workers' compensation. Wilhite says the issue is much bigger than he is.
We're not trying to retire them. We're not trying to give them a disability. We're just trying to offer them a hand, a shoulder to cry on, some medication to help them sleep at night, to forget the things that they've seen.
The bill changed workers' compensation rules so first responders don't have to have a physical injury to get help. Republican Representative Danny Burgess.
Not all wounds are physical. We've broken down barriers and stigma in the military pretty well. We still need to do it a lot more here for first responders, and I believe that this bill goes a long way in helping us do exactly that.
Representatives say not only do Florida's police and firefighters deal with PTSD from deaths they encounter on their day-to-day jobs, but also from mass shootings. Republican Representative Mike Miller mentions the mass murder at an Orlando nightclub.
I want to tell you how much that means to them, how much it means to the survivors from Pulse. I actually represent that district. And I applaud you for the Relands and for all the other folks who are suffering from PTSD, not just because of the Pulse circumstance, but because, as Chair Burgess knows from his time in the military, there are a lot of people that need help, a lot of first responders especially that need help.
For Florida Public Radio, I'm Devondra Alston.
Some in the Florida legislature would like to see changes to the state's growth management laws, but some of the proposals are getting pushback from environmental organizations like 1,000 Friends of Florida. Lynn Hatter spoke with 1,000 Friends Policy Director Thomas Hawkins on what his organization fears House Bill 883 would do.
1,000 Friends of Florida sort of put out an advisory on this. You guys have several concerns with this bill. What are some of them?
We are mostly concerned with how the bill treats urban development boundaries in the state and community redevelopment agencies. First, with community redevelopment agencies, these are agencies created by cities and counties throughout the state. When a neighborhood in a community is blighted, often it's an older neighborhood that hasn't received investment over time, and so it's got inadequate infrastructure, maybe some boarded up homes or buildings. A local government can create a community redevelopment agency that doesn't take any new tax dollars, but reinvests the tax dollars from just that neighborhood back into that neighborhood. It kind of creates fiscal discipline for that city or county to reinvest tax revenue from that neighborhood back. So that's a really important tool for improving and helping communities. House Bill 883 would make a lot of changes to how CRAs work. Probably the most significant one is that it would prohibit local governments from creating any new CRAs in the future. Instead, only the legislature would be able to create CRAs.
Now, why is that a bad thing? Because we have seen over the past few years that there have been concerns with how CRAs use funding. There have been concerns with the way CRAs pick projects.
Some of the proposals in Senate Bill 432, which is the Senate companion, and House Bill 883 are things that we would support. So, for example, requiring ethics training for CRA board members, or requiring that CRAs follow the same purchasing policies as the city or the county in which they're located. Those are good common sense ideas. What doesn't make sense is to change the way CRAs are created. Under current law, you have to have an analysis conducted by professionals investigating the area where the CRA is proposed to determine whether that area is slum or blight. And whether it's slum or blight is based on a very detailed definition in the statute. So you're combining on-the-grounds research with the conditions in a neighborhood against a standard set by the legislature, with ultimately a decision made by the local government. And I think that's the right approach.
And then you also mentioned urban development boundaries. What's going on there?
So urban development boundaries are a tool that some communities use to decide where they're going to build urban infrastructure, like streets and water pipes and fire substations, and where they're not. Essentially saying, you know, for the efficient provision of public services, we're going to draw a line at the edge of the city. And outside the city, we'll have rural development and agriculture. Inside the city, we'll have development served by urban services. And we support that 1,000 Friends. We think it's a smart tool for two reasons. One, it makes places nicer to live if you can get out of town. And two, it is a more efficient way to provide public services. So it saves citizens tax revenue in the long run. What House Bill 883 does is it affects urban growth boundaries in two ways. One, if a local government has an urban growth boundary that was put in place by a referendum, they would have to, going forward, continuously have re-votes to ask this question again of whether they want to keep that urban growth boundary. Now, if they ever decide that they want to get rid of their urban growth boundary, they can stop holding referendums. As long as they want to keep their urban growth boundary, they'll have to vote to keep it over and over again in another referendum every 10 years, perpetually. And we don't think that's a good idea. Once the voters have spoken, we should trust voters. And if we don't trust voters, well, we should ask everybody in the state whether they want an urban growth boundary, not just ask folks who have them whether they would like to get rid of it.
That was Florida Public Radio's Lynn Hatter and 1,000 Friends of Florida Policy and Planning Director Thomas Hawkins. Let's get an update on other legislation making its way through the process as we check in with Bob Brooks from our sister operation, the Florida Channel.
This morning, the Senate laid SB 1562 on the table in favor of committee substitute for House Bill 1059. Both of these bills are aimed at protecting vulnerable older adults from being exploited. House Bill 1059, though, contains language that's a little more specific with regard to the intent and penalty than the Senate bill. HB 1059 was then rolled to third reading. The Senate took similar action when it replaced committee substitute for Senate Bill 290 with committee substitute for House Bill 135. The House bill, in addition to requiring language on motor vehicle registration applications indicating a person's difficulty in hearing, provides for voluntary contributions to Preserve Vision Florida. After the Senate bill was tabled and the House bill was accepted, the bill was rolled to third reading. The Senate passed House Bill 281, which requires DCF to include parents who are in prison when the department develops case plans for their children. The bill passed by a vote of 36-0 and now goes to the governor for his signature. The Senate also passed House Bill 6033, entitled Volunteer Florida Incorporated. This bill prevents future repeal of the nonprofit direct support organization established by the Florida Commission on Community Service in 1994. The House passed the bill last month, and with today's unanimous vote in the Senate, the bill's next and final stop will be the governor's desk for his signature. House Bill 155, entitled State Symbols, designates Florida cracker cattle as the official state heritage cattle breed. The bill also renews the Florida cracker horse as the state horse and the loggerhead turtle as the state saltwater reptile. House Bill 155 was read a second time and is now ready for a full Senate vote. Also ready for a final vote in the Senate, House Bill 173, which would create more affordable housing in the Florida Keys and other critical areas. The bill, which passed the House unanimously yesterday, adds procedures for the selection and purchase of lands under the Military Base Protection Program. Wednesday, the Senate convenes at 10, the House at 10:30. From the Florida Channel, I'm Bob Brooks for Florida Public Radio.
You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, Florida senators are considering legislation some say would give the state's residents more ability to create wills and work with notaries. But as Regan McCarthy reports, opponents of the measure argue it could also lead to more fraud.
Senator Jeff Brandis, a St. Petersburg Republican, says people shouldn't have to rush around searching for a notary. He says technology is changing and Florida law should too.
We think this puts us, Florida, really at the vanguard of technology, but also puts us in a great position to ensure that that everyone has access to this type of technology.
Brandis is behind a bill that would let people get their documents notarized electronically.
The bill provides a framework for online notarizations, creates definitions, procedures, standards, requirements, and exemptions for those online notarizations. The bill also makes changes to current law recognizing online notarizations as acceptable.
Under the bill, a notary public would need to use video conferencing technology that allows them to see and hear a person before providing an online notarization. But the move has some, like Boca Raton Democratic Senator Kevin Rader, concerned about the possibility of fraud.
We're allowing online notaries. Can you tell me why we should do that in the state of Florida, being the fact that the whole purpose of a notary is to make sure that the person is who they are, especially when you don't know who the person is, you've never met them before? And a lot of us here, a lot of people who do notaries, know the person's doing the notary. But in this case, you know, assure me that fraudulent activity will be at an absolute like near 0%.
Brandis says he thinks his bill will reduce the possibility for fraud.
We think utilizing technology, we can determine actually in a better way, in almost a more secure way, the physical presence of somebody. We can look at their identification.
Brandis says the bill also adds safeguards that aren't in place now, such as requiring notaries to keep a log of any services they provide electronically. But during a Senate floor hearing, the main pushback the bill received came on a strike-all amendment Brandis filed.
The amendment also adds language to clarify how electronic will is executed. E-wills will have been included in the Senate bill all along. This amendment provides additional safeguards for wills and also addresses some unique issues as it relates to wills.
But others say the change is last minute, and they've got concerns, especially since Governor Rick Scott vetoed a similar bill last year. Port Orange Republican Senator Dorothy Huckel says the measure makes significant changes to probate law.
Even though this bill passed last year, there were substantial problems with this bill. There were constitutional problems, venue problems, substantive problems, problems with regard to who was in the room? How do we know who's in the room? Who is exercising undue influence?
But Brandis says many of those issues have been cleared up since last year, and he says he's done what he can to get all the stakeholders on board. The amendment passed. The bill is now waiting for a vote from the full Senate. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Sasha Cordner, Ryan Daly, Lynn Hatter, and Regan McCarthy. We also thank Sean Mulcahy, Devondra Alston, and our sister operation, the Florida Channel. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FBRCapReport. And join us every weeknight at this time throughout the 2018 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows, at wfsu.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker. A Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. And from the Florida AFL-CIO, representing over 900,000 union members, retirees, and their families. Committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace. Online at flaflcio.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.